All right, let's go Buffalo indeed. Sal Capaccio joining us now on the Wester Hotline as part of our usual extended Football Friday coverage here. Football Friday, by the way, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, start your day the Crosby's way. Sal, how does a receiving core of Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, Mac Hollins, and Jalen Virgil hit fans? Because that's what maybe we're potentially dealing with on Sunday.
Yeah, and then probably if that's the case, add in another, which would be either Tyrell Shavers or KJ Hamler or Deion Cain.
Because
you're probably not going in with four, but you're right. I mean, that's your four guys, right? There's your core four. We know Keon Coleman is out. Let's start there. So he's been ruled out, and interesting, you know, from Sean McDermott. When I asked him about him this morning, he did kind of put it more in the week-to-week bucket and said, or longer. And I didn't know exactly what that meant, but he said to the local media after that they are having discussions or have had discussions about putting him on injured reserve. That tells me it's and he basically said it's a multiple-week injury.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if they've had discussions about injury reserve, but they don't know, I think that that's at least encouraging that they don't think it's like season-ending or anything like that, right? But let's take a look at the schedule. You get a game here now. You get this week, a game next week, then a bye week. Maybe that's kind of a good little buffer there where you can not put him on injured reserve, and then he gets a full month to recover. So we'll start there. He's not going to play. Then you go to Amari Cooper, who's questionable to play in this game. If Amari Cooper is unable to go, that leaves you with the four that you talked about, because the team literally within the past 5 minutes has announced that they have signed Jalen Virgil to the active roster from the practice squad. So he becomes your fifth receiver, and maybe even your fourth in this situation if you have to elevate somebody else.
Righto. So, I mean, is there a way to gauge Cooper? Is it like a thing that's probably going to go right to Sunday to see how the hand feels and can he catch balls and is he comfortable, pain tolerance and all that kind of stuff, most likely?
I would say we'd get a clue by tomorrow at 4 p.m. If they make an elevation of another wide receiver, that's probably trending towards not playing. The last 2 weeks they've elevated Virgil, and you know they've had to use him. So if that's the case, if they elevate a wide receiver by 4 p.m. tomorrow, that's probably an indication that they might be down another wide receiver. And in this case, it would be Amari Cooper. It doesn't have to be. They could definitely take it up to game time. You still have another, you know, half day there to see how he is when he wakes up, pain tolerance, all that kind of stuff. There is sort of a numbers game here, you have to remember. So Jalen Virgil had already been elevated twice. You only get three times. So Tyrell Shavers only been elevated once. No KJ Hamler, no Deion Cain. You had an open roster spot anyway. It's a simple transaction if the team feels, look, let's just... This is what I'm thinking, Bulldog. They could also think, okay, what if we need somebody else to be elevated, like another safety, now that there's no, Mike Edwards, and there's a running team we're playing? What if we want to elevate a linebacker because suddenly Bale Inspector he couldn't elevate a linebacker. There's nobody there. But you get my point here.
Mm-hmm.
They could do something like that. And now with Virgil being added to the active roster, now you have that flexibility to be able to have another wide receiver and another position possibly. So there are some numbers here you have to kind of work through, but it's probably going to be, you know, more of a clue by tomorrow at 4 p.m. about Cooper.
Sal, one of the interesting notes I found about this, you know, signing from the practice squad, it's a 2-year deal. So I would presume that even when Coleman and Amari Cooper are back and healthy and 100%, that they're now going to have six receivers on the roster when they started the season with five.
Maybe. I don't know if I'd look too much into it. I have to look at the money. It might be because they split it up in some way.
Good point.
For purposes.
Putting the money into next year, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that, because he's only coming up for a certain amount of weeks this year. You know what I mean? A lot of times, I'll say it this way. At the end of the year, when guys sign futures contracts, a lot of times those are 2-year deals as well. So you're just kind of, you know, it's kind of a procedural move. It could mean that, you know, they like him enough. So they also could just literally have him on the team for the next 2 weeks or so and then release him again. He has to pass through waivers and then they put him back on the practice squad. So I wouldn't read too much into that right now, Nate. That might literally be because the plan could be that, and that way you don't have to take out any dead money. You know what I mean, at this point.
Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline here. Bills and Colts coming up on Sunday at 1 o'clock. We've started here talking about injuries, so let's just make it official here with the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Is there anything else to really be worried about with as it pertains to the report, Sal, the injuries?
Yeah, Baylen Spector showed up today with a calf injury. He had not been on the list at all. He was limited today, so, and now he's questionable to play. So that tells me something happened at practice. That, you know, they, whatever. I mean, it could be a like an actual injury. It didn't feel right, whatever. Now, I would say, though, at linebacker, you feel like you got some numbers there, right? And Joe Andreessen would then possibly become your backup linebacker to Terrell Bernard. Now, we've seen Joe Andreessen as the backup to Baylen Spector when Bernard's been out, but we haven't seen Bernard and Andreessen as the 1-2, right? So that could be it. But that's very notable, obviously, because Andreessen is generally a special teams guy. And this brings me back to what I was saying earlier, guys. Like, you know, you may need another special teams guy. If you need Joe Andreessen to be, you know, more of a guy that plays a role in some capacity, you have to start massaging these numbers a little bit. So that's notable. And then on the positive side, no game status for Curtis Samuel, so he's good to go. No game status for Mac Hollins, who went from full to limited, so he's good to go. And no game status for Christian Benford, so he's good to go.
And Kyrie Elam is also okay. Not that it matters,
yeah,
if Kyrie
Elam
there
also.
Anyway, so, but just wanted to be thorough there. All right, so how about approaching this game, Sal? We know, you know, it's a relatively long time ago now. In November of 21, Jonathan Taylor ran all over the Bills. It's a game that just got completely sideways and away from them almost right from the start. And so, you know, we've seen the Bills. It's funny, like, I feel like this has been the week for the narrative on their run defense. Whether it's that the numbers aren't that bad, like DVOA and advanced metrics and whatnot has the Bills pretty favorable against the run, or it's simply the concept that really they're begging teams to run, and so they do, because they are, you know, playing the way they play, which has always been to have the safeties back relatively deep and take away the long stuff. How much of a threat? And Indy's running game is only like ranked 21st in the league. It's not like they're tearing it up on the ground or anything. So how, I don't know, how concerned are you about this matchup?
I'd be more concerned if I knew that the Colts are going to do what they should do, which is pound Jonathan Taylor at the Buffalo Bills. But I'm not sure they're going to do that. They haven't really done that this year. They have not committed to the run game as much as they probably should. And Jonathan Taylor's a really good running back. He's averaging 4.8 yards a carry. I mean, you know, he's having a nice year, but you're right. Their overall numbers are not great because they're not really committing to that. Now, I'll also tell you that, you know, in a weird way, I think maybe you guys feel the same as me. I saw your tweet about like teasing this and I thought about it. Do you think it's better to face, do you think they're better with Flacco or better with Richardson? Let me start there and ask you guys that.
I think I would rather face Richardson. I feel like Flacco at least can get hot, and you know he's gonna take that chance, and you might be able to pick him off like Cleveland did in the playoffs, or excuse me, I got that wrong. Like Houston did in the playoffs, he was playing for Cleveland at the time. So you know that's where sitting back and playing center field on a guy like this should be beneficial. I think I'd rather have the guy that seems borderline incompetent, even though he's a much bigger challenge. Really across the board, athletically, running game-wise. Like, I wonder how much Richardson being out minimizes how worried you have to be about Taylor. Because if Richardson were there, I think you'd have to be more worried about the two of them, and that could really confuse things.
You're very smart. That's exactly where I was going. And there are actually stats that say this, Bulldog. There are stats that say Jonathan Taylor is much better when he has Anthony Richardson as his quarterback than he does when he has Joe Flacco as his quarterback. So, going back to where I started with this and asking you, when they made the change, I said, boy, you know, that becomes a tougher game for the Bills to have Joe Flacco versus Anthony Richardson. Sure, Richardson can be Houdini at times, and he has amazing athletic ability, and he can throw the ball a long way, and you can make that one big play. But, man, Flacco is a quarterback that's seen everything. He's going to be more accurate. However, now you know it's either drop back pass or hand off to Jonathan Taylor, right? I mean, that's what they're going to do.
Right, you know where he's. You know exactly where he's going to be every time. Whether you can get there and impact him is another question, but you know he's going to be there.
That's right. And they're not, you're not running with Joe Flacco to, you don't have to, as you said a minute ago, you don't have to kind of think about the quarterback as a runner now, right? You don't have to kind of concentrate on that. So it does become a bit of a different, more simplified to me game plan on defense to have Joe Flacco. That being said, you're not going to confuse Joe Flacco the way you would Anthony Richardson, and he's going to be an accurate passer. It's going to hurt them a lot not having Michael Pittman play. He's been ruled out as well. So just going back to the run defense, I asked Sean McDermott today if Quentin Jefferson and if there's a chance that Quentin Jefferson and Jordan Phillips would play. He said a good chance. So I expect those guys to play. I expect them to be there. And I think, and Sean McDermott said, this is a line of scrimmage game. All right, let's add these things up for a second. All right, shall we do this?
Yeah.
So we got Keon Coleman's not playing. We know that. Amari Cooper might not play. Michael Pittman is not playing for the Indianapolis Colts. They have Jonathan Taylor, who's really freaking good. The Bills have James Cook and Ray Davis, who have been really good. Both teams have good running attacks, and both teams have been leaky at stopping the run. Sean McDermott then says, this is a line of scrimmage game. I'm thinking we're going to see 40 handoffs on each side, guys. I mean, like, that's what it sounds like to me. You guys are going to be having, you're ready, you're rock and roll. You're watching the fourth quarter of other games that started at 1 o'clock by the time the Bills game ends.
Sal, it's funny you mentioned that too in terms of offensive lines, because you look at the Colts on offense, their offensive line has always been pretty good. Obviously, Quentin Nelson in the middle of that offensive line, they've got some juice. Offensively for the Bills, they've had a great offensive line this year too, and you're talking about a game at the line of scrimmage. Listen, DeForest Buckner still continues to be one of the league's best in the interior. Is he maybe the guy you're looking at in this matchup if you're the Bills, that like, we can't let this guy ruin our game plan, because behind him are two very good linebackers as well in Indianapolis. It's almost like, yeah, their numbers against the run haven't been great defensively this year, but they've certainly got the dogs and the pieces on defense to be good enough to slow down the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Zaire Franklin fan, not just because he went to Syracuse, by the way, which he did, but he's leading the NFL in tackles, right? I mean, this is a really, really fantastic football player. He can fly around the field, and if the guys up front can kind of do their job, you know, that allows him to make a lot more plays. Found out today, I didn't know. Sean McDermott said on my radio program on the Extra Point Show with me, he said, Zaire Franklin went to the same high school as him. How about that? Didn't know that. And then Zaire Franklin went to Syracuse, obviously. He's had an outstanding career. And DeForest Buckner, yeah, you're right. He's not the same player he used to be. You know, if you look, though, at the Indianapolis defense, they're not getting a ton of pressure right now. They're 22nd in the league at sacks per pass attempt. They're 26th in yards per game and per play allowed through the air. Yes, their rushing yards per game by volume. By volume is a lot. They're giving up 150 a game, but by play, they're about the middle of the pack. So even though they've been leaky run defense at times, they also are a good run defense at other times. They stopped the Pittsburgh Steelers pretty darn good a few weeks ago, if you guys remember that. The Steelers came in and tried to pound the ball, and they did a nice job. So, you know, there are opportunities to run on this team, but yeah, I mean, they also have some really fine players there. We'll see. On the other side of the ball, their outstanding center, Ryan Kelly, is not playing in this game. He was placed on injured reserve last week. He's a four-time Pro Bowler, guys. I mean, that's a big blow to their offense, obviously. But otherwise, they obviously have, you know, a really good offensive line. Quentin Nelson is one of those, as you pointed out. The other thing about the Colts is they don't throw to the tight ends. It's wild. Go look at their tight end stats. Like, their leading tight end has like 100 yards receiving. It's wild. Mo Alie-Cox, I believe. Like 10 catches, maybe. I have to go back and look exactly. I was looking at it the other day. Something that's really hurt the Bills this year, guys, throwing to tight ends and throwing to running backs out of the backfield. And I don't think this team poses that much of a threat compared to other teams the Bills have played doing that.
I want to circle back to McDermott talking about this being a line of scrimmage game, Sal. Like, with that in mind, do you think there's some chance that they either go into the game with a different idea personnel-wise on defense, or that maybe they're more ready to pivot quickly than they often are? I already talked about it, how you know, their style of defense invites the run. And I wondered, with McDermott phrasing it that way, line of scrimmage game, do you think maybe that's a clue that something different may take place personnel-wise?
The only thing they would do different, I would say, is play more base. But the only way you do that, that's 4-3. And the only way you do that, though, is you would take Taron Johnson off the field. And who wants that, right? I mean, right. It's wild to think about it from that standpoint. That's really going to be really interesting to see. And I mean, you could think about like more of a a big dime, like in the passing situation, to kind of to help out against the run. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I guess they could, Bulldog. I think it's more of we need healthy bodies in the middle. Defensive tackles, Jordan Phillips, Quentin Jefferson. We're going to have a healthy rotation because we're just going to have to make sure that every single play we have guys ready and fresh to go at it. It's going to be really interesting to see. That's the I wonder going down the road. We've talked about this with Lewis Seen or whatever it is. I mean, it's a catch-22 for the Bills. You never want to take Taron Johnson off the field, but he's so much smaller than what teams can put against you that at some point do you start saying, we need to go three linebackers.
Right. That's what I'm thinking about, whether or not that pivot happens, you know, if it's required, you know, if they, because I'd expect they open up in a base defense. We were talking with Sam Paniatovich from BetQL Daily last hour, Sal, and he mentioned how what Minnesota did to really frustrate Flacco and confuse him, and it was a lot of blitzing. We know the Bills are not that sort of team. Like, I wonder if maybe a tendency breaker to try to get to him, or would you expect they just do their thing, try to win with four, and like, you know, why are we trying to reinvent ourselves? We're 7-2.
Yeah, I expect more of that. You know, I think the Bills are. This feels like a kind of game where you go in there and you play how you've been playing, where you don't need to do anything necessarily special. You make Joe Flacco beat you with guys that aren't named Michael Pittman down the field. Now, they have some nice slot receivers, and Josh Downs can be in there, and Alec Pierce is a nice receiver. But I think you make Joe Flacco try and beat you by standing in the pocket and then handing off to Jonathan Taylor, and then when that happens, you just have to tackle the guy. To me, that's what the game plan calls for on defense in this one.
How much of last night did you take in?
All of it.
Ravens and Bengals, yeah, right.
Well, I was going to say all of it, including a 6-1 win by the Buffalo Sabres, right, which is tremendous, right?
I watched every second of the hockey game and then flipped to the football game when it was over. That was my mode as well. Great game, undone again in part. I mean, a lot of people are talking today about the officiating again, Sal, and I feel like we're yelling into the void. You know, somebody called and said, like, well, what are they going to do about it? Like, well, nothing. Probably right.
Right. I mean, like, listen, I had a call today with someone saying, well, why don't they just have the eye in the sky, the sky judge, fix egregious mistakes? Well, who decides what's egregious?
Right.
Every play you could say, that's an egregious hold. Wait a minute, that's an egregious hold. Wait a minute, that's not a hold. Why did you call that a hold? You can't do that. I mean, you just can't have some sort of, you know, sky judge camera looking down and reviewing every play for penalties. What's egregious to team A is not egregious to team B. It's a mistake, or it's a, hey, no, that's really not a penalty. You can't do that. They tried this with pass interference a few years ago. It went horribly wrong. You can't do it. And nothing happened even. They didn't change anything, and it was stupid. So, right. You know, they're not going to do that. I mean, I would listen to a, hey, hitting a face mask, grabbing a face mask, those kinds of things, right? They're out in the open. It's a safety thing. It's a protection. But even then, it's a little hard to adjudicate, I think. I think, though, what bothered me about last night, you're going to get, listen, coaches are human. They're going to make mistakes. Players are human. They're going to make mistakes. We can't expect our referees to always be perfect. They're going to make mistakes. You have to live with that. Your son played at the highest of level of sports, Bulldog, and how many times you go to a rink and go, come on, that's a penalty, or that's not a penalty, right? I mean, it's just going to happen at every level. It doesn't matter. I get it. What bothered me last night, though, was twice a quarterback had a guy hit his face mask with a hand once he grabbed it. We're supposed to be protecting these quarterbacks, and it feels like it's very, very arbitrary when they want to protect them or they don't want to protect them, especially in a situation like that. Those were two very missed calls. That's the kind of thing that bothers me.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier, like, we've seen glancing blows off the top of the helmet called because it's a head, you know, it's head contact, and they're trying to protect it. And here's the guy with the ball on the game deciding play, and he's got a palm in his face mask. Like, how in the world is
it's
that
also,
not a call?
It's also, Sal, a little bit about the fact it's 3 weeks in a row in the NFL in primetime games, we've seen important situations have really blatantly missed calls, and they're all sort of the same type of call. And on this particular instance, it's two blatant penalties. And you could say, like, I heard Fitzy after the game talking about yesterday, well, he wasn't looking that way, he was kind of an inconsequential player. I hate that conversation.
I was very stunned at Fitz
so was
after
I
the game, saying the things that he said.
So was I. And like, it was a hold, blatantly, and yeah, he tried to sell it. He didn't even need to. It was a blatant hold, and then the face, like, I don't know, Sal. It just, to me, I don't know that there's a right answer, but I, to the caller's point we had earlier, there doesn't really seem to be public consequences for these referees that are missing these calls in the league. The league needs to do something, And I'm not sure anybody's got a great answer on what it exactly is, but it's
there are
it's,
private consequences though.
Sure, there is. Of course,
these guys get graded and how assignments going forward. You know, it's just like, look, I mean, when players make mistakes, the public consequences, they get shamed. Just
they,
like
they want public officials. Stoning. Right, they, right. they just want to see somebody get tarred and feathered.
Yeah.
But there are also private consequences for players, and that could be playing time and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Either way, that each team decides that. But on the game itself, guys, I will say that I just don't think either defense is all that good. You know,
no. Ooh, they're both bad.
We saw that.
Yeah, they're bad.
And what happened to Lou Anarumo's defense? It's just crazy. This guy was a wizard, but you know he loses some parts, and they can't stop anybody now. It's crazy. Every game they're giving up high 20s, 30 points, but they have to go and they have to shoot it out with teams, and they can do that because they Burrow and they have Chase, and you know they're really good on offense. But man, their defense is not good. And the Ravens, honestly, even when they played the Bills, like they're not, they don't have a really good defense, especially against the pass. They had a really good night against the Bills. The Bills had a bad game plan, bad execution, had some injuries. It was an awful night for Buffalo, no doubt. No excuses about it, but that's what happens in a league over a 17-game season. It was one of those stinkers that the Bills had. But overall, I just think the Ravens, they have some issues. These teams are very similar, the Ravens and Bengals, where, boy, they can beat you. When they're on, their offenses are almost unstoppable, but you can really score on them.
Let me ask you this, Al, in the Bengals terms of things here, Ja'Marr Chase is going to make $1 billion. How That's big amazing. Of a fumble is it for Cincinnati to let this season start without getting him tied up long term? Because you could have controlled their problem. It's going to cost him at least $5 million a year. It might cost him more than that, Sal. And like, you've talked about this a bunch, but everybody kind of knows they're not known for paying their players.
No, they've got a terrible
reputation. The guaranteed, you know, money after year one, like, they've really painted themselves in some kind of corner here, because he's going to not just set the market for wide receivers. He might be the highest paid non-quarterback. He might rival quarterback contracts.
I feel really bad for Joe Burrow from this respect, right? Which is, it's going to be Chase, it's going to be Higgins. They're not going to figure this out. And when are they going to be in position again to get these types of players?
They're not.
You know, they're not going to pay them. They're not going to go out and pay other guys like that. They have to find them in the draft. They have to find these, you know, cheaper contracts. There's no doubt about it. It is. You're right. I mean, it's an egregious mistake on their part not to do that. They should have done this. He wanted it. And, you know, I mean, it felt like, I think you go back a few weeks ago, that he even was under the impression it was going to happen. It never happened, right? Here, and I'll give you this one. Let's not leave this thought on a Friday. Maybe you guys can tell me something happy. But all I can think about is if Ja'Marr Chase gets the free agency and the Kansas City Chiefs go after him.
Why would you put that out there?
I mean, it really bothered me today thinking about it. I thought about that this morning.
Well, thanks for bringing us into your nightmare.
I've never been more disappointed in you.
Right. I mean, why would you do that?
I couldn't breathe for a second when you said that. I was
he was a gasp.
Maybe the Bills will go after him. Remember when Brandon Bean said a few years ago, yes, I'd love to get a guy like Ja'Marr Chase. I don't want to suck enough to have to be be drafting that high.
I did say that, yeah. It's a good quote.
All right, Sal, we kept you long. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
enjoy
Sal.
The weekend. Safe travels to Indy, and we'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys. Have a great weekend.
On Sunday, of course, game day. That's Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? We will continue along here with the Football Friday vibes brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your day the Crosby's way. It's time for us to take a break. Nate and I will be back in a snap. Brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official, they're going to want that every time
yep.
now. The official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
There is a chance. There's a good chance. You know, we'll see again what their pitch count is, because they haven't been playing all that much at their previous teams to this point in the season. It'll be an interesting rhythm to see what we can get established there, and trying to put each player in the best position with the right amount of reps for each of those guys.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking about the additions on the defensive line that were made earlier this week. Both expected to be available and playing, according to McDermott, there sort of meeting out.
They're exactly, on the active roster.
Exactly so, how much, right? Yeah, yeah, they were not brought in to be practice squad dudes and wait for an opportunity. I think they're probably going to go right in. So Jordan Phillips and Quentin Jefferson, we'll see what kind of impact. I would expect if you, this is such a lousy way to put this. I would be optimistic about getting a few plays from Jordan Phillips. Like, he's capable of making plays. He's also capable of tearing a hamstring just moving. So, like, I worry about, like, him longevity-wise. I feel like he's a shooting star. Like, it just, right? Although even at this age, maybe there's not so much shooting left. But I feel like he just goes so hard that he breaks, is what happened. Yeah. Read it, find his injury history. It'll take you a while.
Yeah.
It is, there's a lot. I'm not making fun of him for it. I mean, it's just he's had a tough time staying healthy is what he's had. So anyway, 803-0550 is the number here if you want to get in. Nate Geary is Hello. In for Mike Schoeppe today. I am the Bulldog. Joe Kelly hanging out as well in place of Zach, who's on his way to Austin, Texas, to see his beloved Texas Longhorns play some college football tomorrow. So how about you? How much of a favor, if at all, do you think – the Colts have done here to the Bills, or did they? Are they making it harder? Flacco, would you prefer to see the Bills play Flacco or Richardson?
100%. The thing last year,
you'd rather see Flacco.
Yeah. The thing last year where he like looked like an all pro for 7 weeks, and then yep, they haven't gotten that this year from Flacco in Indianapolis. Last week was a tough watch. I usually try to watch the previous game. If I have time, I'll do it in all 22, but more or less I put the condensed version on, try to take some notes, watch these games, get an idea of what the heck. He did not look good. And when he was pressured, he's always been a statue. He is end of career Peyton Manning level statue. Still has some good arm strength, mm-hmm. but yeah. I mean, if you can generate pressure with four and get back and into coverage, you should be able to do some things. The guy I'll be looking at with, you know, Pittman on the bench, Alec Pierce early this season, the first couple of games, and then Flacco's first game was really a significant deep threat guy for them. I mean, he's averaging over 20 yards of reception right now.
Is he
now
the guy who caught that crazy long throw early in the year
from Richardson? Yeah, I mean, they drafted him in the second round, a high pick from Cincinnati. He hadn't really done anything in his first 2 years. Really, this year has popped. And then Adee Mitchell, you know, is a fairly high draft pick and was the other fast guy from Texas. He's had some flashes, not a lot of looks. Both those guys are going to get extended opportunities this week against this Bills secondary. So, all in all, I would rather play Joe Flacco. See, I mean, 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, I'm with Sal. Sal and I agree. I feel like Richardson is so remedial. I mean, I don't think he really knows what he's doing yet, right? He's hardly played college or the NFL. And I feel like McDermott matched up with him. I would just feel like I'm going to eat this kid alive.
Yeah.
Sure, he is going to make plays because of his athleticism and all that. But, like, you know, can you win a game on that? I mean, I suppose he could be that spectacular. I feel like Flacco, you said a few things that I think are key there. Getting pressure with four. He had a lot of trouble against Minnesota with pressure. And of course, that was a lot of blitz looks.
That's
and a lot of
Brian
exotic
Flores
stuff.
Loves, yep.
And that is not, it's the antithesis of what Sean McDermott loves. So if you can win with four, then you're going to get your pressure and then you've got something. But I think if you don't, like this guy, I'm just imagining Shane Steichen trying to explain to Anthony Richardson what Sean McDermott and Bobby Babbage might give him for looks and to try to confuse him and all the stuff that this Bills defense has been so good at doing for the last, well, really since McDermott got here. And Richardson sort of processing it all going like, I don't have any idea what I'm doing. Whereas Flacco, I think whatever Steichen is going to tell him, I feel like Flacco could finish his sentences. Oh, they do this and then they do that. And this is that. This look turns into that look and whatever. It doesn't mean he's going to execute it and do it, but I don't think you're going to confuse him. I mean, he might not see
That's
a
right.
safety, but he's going to have a pretty good idea. He's seen what Sean McDermott likes to do on defense hundreds of times, whereas I think the kid would have no idea.
Here's where the prevailing opinion of I'd rather be facing Flacco than Anthony Richardson, red zone. It is if nothing else,
mm-hmm.
they get to the red zone. They can run read option, they can run RPO, they can do a lot of stuff, and he's a real weapon with his legs inside the red zone. And you see how difficult it is for teams to defend Josh Allen when they get to the red zone. I hear people talk about it all the time. It's like he's one of the best red zone quarterbacks ever. Josh Allen, because he's capable of running you over, and you can run, you can have the run pass option, and he can throw it anywhere on, you know, he can fit it into small windows. That's the biggest difference for them, is they're not as dangerous inside the red zone.
Yeah, and on, that's a good point.
They're not going to be running quarterback sneaks on fourth and one and third and one. And those are areas in those pivotal, important down and distance and in the green area. Like, those are areas to me where Anthony Richardson is so much more of a threat than Joe Flacco. And that's really where I think for me is, yeah, you know, I'm sure Sean McDermott would have a heyday moving safeties around pre, post snap, and, you know, mixing up coverage mm-hmm. looks and bringing some zone blitz and dropping back, you know, eight players, nine players. But at the end of the day, you just lose so much athletic ability. You lose an edge over the defense when you have a player that cannot move and is a statue like Joe Flacco.
I wanted to ask you for, well, a show and a half basically now, because you were here yesterday and you're here now. So I'll do this now because, you know, the day's just going to get away from me. As someone who played the position in high school and then at Buffalo State,
mm-hmm.
do you think Richardson is not playing because his completion percentage and interceptions are so high, or, well, so low and so high, he's just, you know, executing poorly? Or do you think he got benched because he tapped out?
It's hard because I've never seen a quarterback tap out before.
Right.
Ever. At right. any level.
I don't think anyone has.
I ran triple option. Like, there's a lot of times I was dog tired calling a play in the huddle. And you're just like doing it again.
Right.
But I've never seen it done. It could be. Here's the thing. I think it's largely a false sense of how good the Colts believe they are. I think the Colts think that they're good enough to make the playoffs.
Sure. That's probably not realistic.
And I think the general manager has a little bit of pressure on him from ownership to be a playoff team. They think they've got a good roster. They think they've got some good pieces. And I think that they think the quarterback's holding them back. And while that's true, I don't think they're a good playoff team with Joe Flacco.
Right. Me either. I think when your quarterback demonstrates publicly that he has basically no idea how football works.
Yeah.
It's tough. I think that's tough. And what I wonder, and this is only all you can do is speculate about, because I don't know the kid. I don't know, like, what, but what else doesn't he know? You know, like, if such a fundamental, elemental piece of playing that position at the highest level is missing, like, what else day to day is he missing some common sense that,
well,
like, I'm not saying the kid has to be stupid. He just might be one of these people that doesn't get it, you know? And, like, I don't know. I wouldn't want to keep rolling with that guy.
I will tell you this. It's so hard to judge this not knowing what it's like at practice. Because I don't know.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Because it could be very obvious to everyone at practice that, like, this guy shouldn't be out there.
Right.
And there is a real, and this goes at any level of, and it's probably just about every sport. If there is some sort of, like, preferential treatment towards a player because of where he came from, draft status, mm-hmm. bring it down, parental, their dad's a booster, and you as a player are watching this guy or gal in a position of he or she is not the best player there that's helping this team win, that's how you lose a locker room. Like, for sure, especially a team that has a lot of veterans like Indianapolis does. I don't think it's a leadership thing. Like, I saw him, they showed him at halftime last week. He was the last guy. Like, he seems like a guy that's doing the right things, that says the right things. I think he's young. He's a little immature. He didn't play a lot in college. And they drafted him really high. By the way, if they didn't, somebody else would.
I would have drafted him first. Yeah. I loved him coming out.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not someone who's been, like, laughing at the draft pick or dogging him all along. I feel like the tapping out
made them
able to hide behind the stats.
Totally.
Like he's been playing badly. He deserved to be benched, but we want to see it through because we have a lot invested. And, oh, wait, he said what? What? Oh.
What it was, I think it was probably something along where it's like there's this trend of self-inflicted wounds where he's hurting his credibility with his teammates by being what he's saying in front of the media.
Right.
But his play in practice, his preparation, like those are just all things that I don't know. But I would be the tip of the sword is definitely the tapping out and then telling people I was just tired. Like even his teammate is on the podcast on that Monday is like, yeah, like just lie. Like say
right. Well, furthermore, you while I'm into really reachy speculation territory, yeah. How does someone like media relations, somebody get a hold of him before he goes to meet with the media?
Hey, they're going
to
ask you about this.
They're definitely going to ask you about it. What are you going to say? All right. Don't say that. Here's what you should say.
Let me help you.
You should say you felt something in your hamstring and you were worried and you needed to go get looked at. Well, you didn't even go in the blue tent. Well, once I realized that I was okay, I didn't need to. Whatever.
Right.
Just roll out something. The organization leaving him there to, again, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, maybe there wasn't time. I don't know how all that works, but I just feel like somebody should have protected him. And they just let him roll that out there, and it was just such a horrible look. It seems silly to think like a player with that much potential could be getting held back by that, but I wonder if it's not like just the first public acknowledgement we've had of something that they've been dealing with since they drafted him. Like, is he just not quite all the way there? Like a little Russell Wilson-esque, you know, oddball guy, whatever. I don't know, because, yeah, I was tired. I had to come out. What?
Yeah, it's just...
Dude, yeah. Brutal. 803-0550 is the number. He's Nate Geary in for Mike Shope today. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR. Oh, we are at cruising altitude here on a Friday afternoon. WGR approaching the... 5 o'clock hour. The whistle's going to blow. Quitting time, almost. Do you even know that reference?
No, I don't. Okay. I know that there used to be a whistle or almost a steam whistle, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that would indicate folks are they're ready to go home.
Never watched the Flintstones? Fred, no. The whistle would blow and Fred would slide down the back of the dinosaur and into his car and then drive. As the show ever sounded older. 803-0550.
No, trust me. I was a frequent listener of the show. It sounded older.
He's Nate Geary sitting in for Mike Shope today on the Bull. Let's squeeze George in real quick before we hit the top of the hour. George, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I waited for you because I had to say this.
All right.
Really? Epinesa, Oliver, all this, we're talking about draft capital, and we're talking about maybe not being able to run down Joe Flacco.
What do you mean we're talking about not being able to run down Joe Flacco?
Come on. So Joe Flacco should pose a problem to Epinesa and...
But he could. If they don't win their matchups and get to him, then yeah, he's a veteran that I think is going to know where to go with the ball. And the point I'm making about him versus Richardson is he's not going to be confused by what Sean McDermott's doing. He might throw it to the Bills anyways, but I don't think he's going to be confused by anything. Whereas Richardson, I think his head would be spinning.
You know what, Bulldog? Many times I think you're the sense of reason. That's why I'm glad you fielded this call, because we have spent, we're talking about seventh-round draft choices and sixth-round draft choices and not going out and get somebody. I don't know about the cap hits, but we have first and second high draft picks that aren't performing. What's Ed Oliver doing?
Well, he's not producing this year. I don't disagree.
Yeah, but I wish he was. I'm not hitting on him. I'm just saying.
No. I get it. So, but look, I'm not sure what the sixth and seventh round pick. I'm not sure what the point is. What's the point, George? The Bill should kill the Colts. I agree. They should kill the Colts. I don't know that they're gonna.
No, but here's my point. We're so we keep talking about draft capital. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do that. We need draft capital. We've blown big time draft capital on people. Epinesa, Greg Rousseau, is he or isn't he? Ed Oliver, can't find him with a search warrant. And we're worried about spending six-round, seven-round draft choices on stuff that might help us now. I don't think they have a sense of immediacy.
So you wanted them to trade a six- or seventh-round pick to find someone to replace that Oliver and or A.J. Epenesa. Got it. Okay. Glad we squeezed that in before the top of the hour. Let's take a timeout. Thank you for the call, George. Appreciate it. Nate Geary's in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog. Matt Perino's New York. What's it called? New York Upstate.
New York Upstate.
Thank you. New York Upstate.
The Shout Podcast.
Shout Podcast. That's it. Thank you. Matt Perino will be our guest coming up after the top of the hour update. I'm the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR.